stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with Jazzy McAllister. And not only is her name unusual, she's unusual. If you've been listening to my show, you know that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And Jazzy is currently doing that in the theater. But this is the latest in a long line of ways in which she has made her living and her life. And the earlier ones have nothing to do with performing or the theater, and they're quite unusual, or at least that's how it seems to me. Apparently it didn't seem that way to Jazzy. Jazzy is also currently appearing in the production of All Shook Up at the Plato at the Golden Apple in Sarasota, Florida. And I have some songs from the original cast album of that. I'm going to play maybe as many as four or five of them because they're wonderful. And you will know them. I'm not going to give it away. Okay, so here is the show with Jazzy and songs from All Shook Up. That's a clue, and hang on, here comes the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice, oh. You really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap.
Personal recovery, recovery of our person. If you've been listening to my show, you know that I believe that early in our lives, we, all of us to some extent or another, have been discouraged from demonstrating, expressing, showing some part of ourselves, some aspect of ourselves, some quality of ours. And that we hide that quality undercover. And, again, if you've been listening, you know that I wrote a book about it called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And that if you were curious to find out more about this aspect of all of our lives, you could read the book, which is up on my website, TheLynnShow.com, TheLynnShow.w. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, or you'll get a different The Lynn Show. And up there on the website, you can listen to the first chapter of the audiobook. You could buy the book at The Lynn Show store. Or you could click on email me and talk to me about it. Last week I was talking about the price that we quite often have to pay for the recovery of a hidden quality. When we take a quality from our undercover and add it to our cover story, the cover story being those list of qualities that we identify as ourselves. So let's say you think of yourself as a very shy person. Well, I believe that there's a very good chance that undercover there's a little actor in you, a little performer, a little center stage, spotlight kind of person. And maybe at this time in your life, it would benefit you to find some of that, to be able to be a little more demonstrable, to take center stage a little bit, to stand up for yourself, to say no. Well, there are all kinds of reasons why shyness, which is not in itself a bad thing. There's nothing wrong with being shy. But there may be times when one would rather not be shy. And so if you have the quality of unshy, undercover, you might want to recover it. So at the end of the show last week, I was talking about the fact that recovery often comes with a price. And in fact, although I didn't say it then, there's a chapter in the book called The Price and the Payoff. And for the payoff, there is pretty much always a price, which is one of the reasons that we don't do it. Our unconscious knows perfectly well that there'll be a price to pay for it. So I want to talk a little bit about that today, about what the possible prices are. A concept of mine that's also in the book is the relationship contract. I believe that whenever two people begin a relationship, and this can be with birth, with your parents, or siblings, or friends, or employers, or spouses, or peers, or neighbors, it doesn't matter. Whenever a relationship is initiated, whenever it begins, there is a contract that both people sign onto. It's not written, obviously, and it's not even conscious. And it only has one clause, and that is, I'll be who I am, and you be who you are. If the change that you want to make means that you will be different in some, many, all of the relationships that you've established in your life, then when you are different, when you are no longer living up to your contract to be whatever it was you said you would be, for example, let's say you've decided that you're shy, and so in all of your relationships, you are the shy one. And someone else gets to have center stage. Someone else gets to speak for you because, oh, well, you know, he or she is so shy. Let me take care of this. Those relationships will be affected. In fact, when you start speaking up for yourself, you can be seen, and in fact mostly are seen, as violating the contract, breaking the contract. And the longer the contract has been in force, which means the longer the relationship has been, so of course those with your family are the longest, but pretty powerful ones with friends that you've had a long time, and certainly with lovers or spouses or mates, that person who has not changed, who has not broken the contract, can feel betrayed. And there will be, quite often there is, a lot of pressure on the person who is changing not to change, to go back to being who they were. This is true even if they've been trying to get you to change, that they've been encouraging you to be more forthright, more outgoing. Watch out when you are, because contracts that you didn't even know you had been a signatory to will come up, and people will respond, and there can be the price of losing a relationship, and sometimes significant relationships, when you recover parts of yourself which you had previously kept hidden. So, there are things to do about this, and hopefully I will be talking about that in future shows. Because this is what the Lynn Show is all about. The Lynn Show is all about recognizing that you are more than you thought you were, and that it is possible to be more and more of who you are. And as a therapist, whose practice is entirely on the phone at this time, I have seen people recover parts of themselves and successfully navigate the obstacles and the prices that one has to pay in order to be all of who you are. Okay, in another attempt to make this point, I interview, as again, if you've been listening, you know, people who make their living or their life with an art. Because in order to do that in our culture, boy, it has to be who you really are. We make it so hard for actors or musicians or fine artists, writers. So these people, when you listen to them, you can hear they are who they really are. And today, my interview with Jazzy McAllister is particularly significant because although, as I said, Jazzy is making her both her living and her life in the theater in Sarasota, Florida these days, previously, she thought she was something else, something quite different than a performer, something quite remarkable for the slight, beautiful woman that she is. I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to let Jazzy tell her story. But as I also said in the opening, she is currently appearing in All Shook Up at the Golden Apple in Sarasota. And I was given several songs from the cast album. This is not from their production, but it will give you a taste of the show because I understand, although I have not seen it, I've seen Jazzy in a number of things, and she's remarkably talented. So, and I've heard and I know that she's wonderful in All Shook Up, and I'm looking forward to it. But maybe this will give you a taste to come on down to the Golden Apple if you live anywhere near, or if you're thinking of making a trip to Florida and see Jazzy and her remarkable ensemble cast in All Shook Up. So I'm going to begin by playing the title tune, All Shook Up, and then I'm going to play Can't Help Falling in Love with You. Then I'm going to let Jazzy tell her story. So here, All Shook Up.
Oh, well, a friend to my soul, what's wrong with me? I'm itching like a cat on a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love. Huh. I'm all shook up.
Wrong.
So I am here with Jazzy McAllister in the upstairs at Maximo's in Sarasota, Florida, in this splendid space where she makes things happen.
Yes, I make things happen.
So I interview people who make their living or their life within art. And I only ask one question. But before I ask that question, I think, as I understand it, the art to which you have given most of your life or much of your life is theater. It's acting, it's singing, it's... am I close?
Well, I did not discover acting until about 2005, 2006, when I first moved to Sarasota.
Wow.
And it was one of those things that throughout school, I always thought I could do that. I would watch movies. You know, I'm a big Barbara Streisand fan. Mm-hmm. Love her movies. And young Dinah Ross, and she did The Wiz, and Lady Sings the Blues, and I thought, I can do that. But very practical family, very practical upbringing. And so the idea was I would go to college, I'd go to law school, and I'd become an attorney.
My goodness.
That's my background. And even along those lines, it kind of got a little mushed, and I went into the Army.
Okay, hold on. All right. Let's back up. I could do that. Did you have any experience with it? You didn't sing as a child or perform or dance in the kitchen or something?
Talent shows in
school. Back up. So if you sang in talent shows in high school, there must have been a moment earlier on when you sang. I mean, what would have given you the idea to compete?
I don't know.
You didn't sing in the choir in school? You didn't?
No.
Nothing?
No.
It's really fascinating.
And in the theater world, I did props. I was technical. I was behind the scenes helping my friends. But never
in school?
In school, but never thought that I should be on stage.
Well, did you sing to yourself? Did you sing with the radio?
I did, but that mental, you know, transition to this is something I'm doing for me because I like to do it, and this is something I could do out on stage, no.
Well, this is something I am doing for me because I like to do it. Do you remember that?
You know, it's probably because coming from a musical family.
Oh, well, tell me about that.
It's a given. You know, my grandfather, amazing singer, opened for Marvin Gaye when he was younger.
Oh, my goodness.
I have uncles and aunts who just have amazing voices. And music, big part of growing up, Motown and, you know, that sort of thing. So it was not a conscious, oh, my God, this is something I like to do. It was just something you did.
You did. Right. Okay. So, so you did do it, and you liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then apparently you liked it enough and felt comfortable enough to get up in talent shows in high school.
Okay.
No? I mean, can you imagine why somebody would do that if they didn't like it or they didn't think it was okay? I mean, it's hard to imagine a person getting up there thinking this is going to be a horrible experience and they're going to hate me.
No. It is almost one of those, it's what you did in school, you know, as, I won't even say a hobby, kind of after school programming.
Yeah, you were just a good girl.
You know,
you just did what you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's what it's beginning to sound like, that there was a path, well-trodden, so to speak, and you understood that as a child of this family, as a person in this community, as a student in this school, these are the things that you did if you could, and you did them.
I filled my time with reading and singing. Yes.
Right.
That's what I did, and not, I guess, what would be considered bad things.
Good girl. Yeah, no, I think it's true. I think that the picture that's emerging is of a
child, a student, a young woman, who was, what is the word I want? Fulfilling her destiny, sort of doing what was expected of her that was comfortable, easy, even pleasant. I mean, it's not like, you know, they wanted you to be a circus performer or something.
But, you know, not, and I think that's the point, not with conscious intention.
No, no, I understand.
Because my intention was, you know, law school.
Law school, right, okay. So, okay, so you didn't go to law school or you did?
I did not.
So what happened?
After the Army, I was
pretty much... Well, anyway, how did you get into the Army? That is not a common... I mean, did your family... were people... I mean, you've got a family who's in the arts. It was in rock and roll, for God's sake. This is not the Army.
Well, we're also talking two different sides of my family. So my mom's side, very musical, very outgoing. Dad's side, analytical, practical, law school.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
So, you know.
And so what we have here.
Back and forth between the two.
This sort of the tug of war, you know, between people's needs for you.
Right.
And
right.
I imagine that was a part of your deciding who you were going to be in the world. You had these very different influences.
Definitely. Influences and expectations.
And expectations. Yeah, I didn't say it, but it's implied,
yes.
Of course. So you balanced them. It sounds like you balanced them in your early life by doing, well, both, right? I mean, you sang and you read.
The singing was such a small part of my life, so
wow.
That, no. I mean, even though, yes, I had the influence and it was the expectation, it is also what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very analytical person, and
yeah.
So going into law enforcement was ideal. It's exactly what I wanted to do at that time. You know, and then when I saw Silence of the Lambs and that character, Clarice, I wanted to be her.
Wow, you wanted to be Barbara Streisand and Celeste.
There you go, exactly. I
and if there was ever a conflict, I think there it is. So tell me how you wound up in the Army.
Well, after college, which isn't typical for most people that go into the service.
Just curiosity, you didn't say, what did you make? Oh, well, you were going to law school, mm-hmm. So you were a pre-law student.
Yes.
All right, okay, so you graduate and you've not applied to law school?
I've not applied to law school. I thought I would take a year off after
uh-huh.
graduating. My mother was then living in Washington State. She said, come out for a visit, take a break. And in the process of moving there, I saw a billboard for the FBI, and it was targeting African-American women. And so I did some research, and yes, they were. They were on a big campaign looking for African-American women, but with college degrees and military experience, a plus.
Wow.
And I thought, I'm African-American, yes. As far as I know. I have a degree.
Right.
I could
You're
go
a woman.
In. I'm a woman. I could go into the service and get a couple years and apply, and they'll beg me to come in.
Right.
So that was the plan.
Because you were going to go into law enforcement anyway, and this way you didn't have to go to law school.
Right.
I'm sorry. This is not anybody's typical scenario. It just isn't. You,
right.
You must certainly know this.
Right.
So, okay, so you enlisted in the...
Army.
In the Army. And what did you do there?
Military police.
Military police. Good grief. For those of you who aren't looking at Jessie, I mean, she's slight, you know. I mean...
5'4"-ish.
Yeah.
Maybe 100 pounds.
Right, exactly. And beautiful. I mean, it's just not your typical,
thank you.
You know. So so they took you in the military police, I guess. I mean, you said, I am enlisting and I want to be in the military police?
No. I went in and said I want to do military intelligence.
Oh.
And they said, you'd really like the military police.
Really?
And I was like, okay, because I loved the physical aspect of being in the Army. I loved it. Training,
okay. Right.
Boot camp, loved it.
Oh, my God.
And I thought, okay.
So you went into the military?
And it was only supposed to be two.
Right.
Turned into four.
Because?
Politics. Let's just say politics.
You mean you couldn't get out?
Let's just say politics.
Okay, fine. Okay, fine. Right. So what did you do in the military police?
What you would typically, you know, do.
I don't have, I don't know what.
Police officer. My first duty station was Korea, and a lot of that was policing the soldiers. basically. Keeping them, you know, making sure they don't go complete buck wild just because they're not in the States anymore. So that's what a lot of that was. And when I came back here to Georgia was my next duty station. I want to say command central. It's dispatch. I did dispatch there. And then my next duty station was North Carolina, and then I got out.
Wow. And I'm assuming you're glad you did it.
It was a very interesting experience.
I'll bet.
And I met my first husband there in Korea, and he had already put in between the Army and the Navy about 22 years.
Wow.
So it was time for him to retire, and what do most people do when they're going to retire? They move to Florida. So that's how I got to Florida. And we moved to Northport in 2003 because his family was in Venice. And so to be close to them, we moved to Northport. And
wow.
That's how I got to Florida.
Amazing. But it doesn't look like you went to the FBI.
I did not.
No. Had you changed your mind
by then? I had changed my mind.
Really?
I had enough.
Wow.
Yes.
Astonishing. And so how did your family feel about all of this?
By now, my family has pretty much realized I'm going to do what I'm going to do.
Right.
And, yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it's this dichotomy. I mean, what it looks like, I mean, maybe this isn't accurate, but what it looks like from the outside is that you spent the first 18 years of your life essentially trying to do what they wanted you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you... I don't know what to call it.
It's funny because having the influence, but then also the genetic predisposition to just do my own thing comes from my mother.
Ah.
You know, that's her, where she was considered the black sheep who she didn't follow. You know, she always did her own thing. So moving to Washington State was like, oh!
Yeah, right. What are you doing there?
What are you doing?
Right.
And so it is pretty much ingrained.
I got it.
From my mom, too. At some point, it clicks.
Right. It's like the delayed release, right?
I'm going to do this. Not asking your permission. I'm going to do this.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay, so now you're in Florida. You're in Northport. And you said your first husband, so I assume that marriage didn't...
And part of moving to Florida was trying to put it back
together.
You know, the pieces were starting to fall apart. And
right.
So about, that was 2003, 2 years later, it was...
No.
Even a move to Florida couldn't fix this.
Right.
And within that time, I had started my own jewelry business. I was a jewelry designer. And I had started gaining clients in Naples and Venice and Inglewood and St. Armand Circle. I had three really good clients on St. Armand Circle and then one here in downtown. And so because I was traveling from Northport to Sarasota so much and he and I were breaking up anyway,
right.
It made sense for me to move to Sarasota.
Right.
So that's how I got here. And one of the boutiques I had jewelry in was Everything But the Girl in the Rosemary District. And she used to have on Friday evenings kind of like a get-together party kind of thing. And I had just met Zan Ofterhide, who is now a professional comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with someone. It might have even been her. And we were talking about theater and the arts and Sarasota being an arts town. And I just happened to say, almost under my breath, you know, that's something I've always wanted to do. And Zan, who's behind me, kind of like went, And she went, really? And I said, yeah, you know, it's just one of those things growing up. I always thought if I ever had the chance, you know, I'd always want to do it. And she says, you know, I'm in a show and one of the girls is leaving. It might be an opportunity for you. And I thought, okay. I honestly did not think much of it. I thought, what the hell? Give her my name and number.
Right.
And so she did. The next day, I get a call. I don't receive the call. I get a message, voicemail message from, I thought she said, Katie Couric. I thought,
wow.
What are the odds?
Yeah.
It wasn't.
No.
It was Katie Curran.
Oh.
Who, of course, is an amazing, wonderful director, playwright, and director of the Source Teen Theater, which is a division of Planned Parenthood. She had written a show called The Day I Opened My Eyes, which Zan was in. And the character, because it was a story of different young people, adolescents in different countries, and telling their story. And they would transition to another young person in another part of the world. And the character that she was replacing was South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
The actress was Sayesha Mukarno, which I think you know who she is. And so she calls me up and she asked me when I come in, and I thought, okay, I had never been on an audition. I didn't know what a reading was. I didn't know any of this. I show up and I meet her, and of course she's lovely, and she gives me the script, and I just read it, and she says, that's good, now I want you to stand up and read it. And I did, and she says, that was great, now can you do that with a South African accent? Okay. I don't know what to do, and I don't know what I channeled. I don't know where it came from,
but
it came out, and she said, great, this is when rehearsals are.
Oh, my God.
So I got it?
Yeah.
She's like, yeah. And I would have to credit KT with helping me find my voice. Because, like I said, I'd never acted before. I had never done any of this. And she is an extremely gifted, wonderful, talented, patient, loving, nurturing director. And she helped me to find my stage voice, but then also my voice. Because, as you said, growing up and the expectations, and I was very inside. I learned to find my comedic voice that helped me get through high school, you know, being the class clown. But I was still very much an introvert and very much in here. And she helped me to really just blossom. In fact, I call her Red Bull. She gives you wings. that's what I say about Katie. And so that experience, but then also because it was a granted piece, we traveled. So first acting job ever. I get to go on tour. It's a paid gig.
Oh, my God.
And we got to perform before members of Congress.
Oh, my goodness.
Talk about a really good first-time
experience. Yes, yes, yes.
And developed a wonderful friendship with Katie. In fact, then joined Source. And I think I've probably done two or three pieces since then that traveled through different high schools and middle schools in Sarasota and then Bradenton County. And in this process, KT has learned video editing, and because she's a wonderful playwright, she's also done screenwriting now, and she's turned a couple of her pieces into films, which I then got an opportunity to do that. So I've transitioned also into doing a bit of movie stuff.
And then?
From there, I met Carol Kleinberg, who is my Jewish mommy. I call her my Jewish mommy, and I call her up and, Mom, I need your help. And again, a wonderful director, and she cast me in a few things, and somehow I met Rick Kirby over at Manatee Players, and he cast me in a couple shows, and then my very dearest friend Jeffrey Kinn over the Players, I met him when they were doing Got a Minute, and positively fell in love with him. And then somehow I met Eva Slain, who, again, in the theater world, is just a dynamo, and took me under her wing for quite a bit and introduced me to WBTT. And Nate Jacobs, fell in love with him, and got to do probably three or four shows with West Coast so far.
Yeah, I've seen you. Well, and you're wonderful.
Thank you.
You're wonderful. I mean, they were not doing it simply... Well, I mean, I know all these people, and I know that they are wonderful and talented and generous, but I also know that they're not spending that energy nowhere. So so now, how did your first singing thing happen?
Somewhere getting recommended for the Manatee Players show. And I think it was Hank Williams came first. And my second husband, who's also a performer, we both were chosen to do that. In fact, he got the lead of Hank. And they needed someone to fill what would have been the waitress part in that, but then also the person who teaches Hank how to sing. They couldn't find a male person to fill that role, so they kind of combined the two. So I had to become this bluesy type of singer and this waitress character. And so Joseph Spinella, who's an amazing opera singer and vocal coach, I found him. This is all happening at the same time. So you want to talk about serendipity. This was just all overlapping. Mm-hmm. And I started taking lessons with him, and then I got this part, and I said, Joseph, you need to help me. I have a very high soprano voice. And he helped me find my low voice. And so I did Hank Williams, and then shortly after that, I did, what was the next Manatee players, Smokey Joe's Cafe, which I had to do, still do both the low voice, bluesy kind of sound for Brenda, was that role. I don't know how that happened or why necessarily, but I enjoyed it. And I did do Cab Calloway with West Coast, which was some singing, mostly Nate.
Mm-hmm. Mostly Nate,
not so much me. Yeah. But that was also a singing role. And I did promise myself that I would not do any more musical theater because it's just not more forte. It's not my forte. I love doing straight dramatic pieces. A Raisin in the Sun was my most precious role to
do. You were amazing.
Thank you.
You were amazing. And though the entire production was amazing.
It was the perfect storm. Production team, the cast, it was the most excellent theater experience I think I've ever had.
Wow.
But all of my experience, I think, led up to that, culminated to that. And what was also extremely beneficial to me was being in that cast with Alice Gatling, who's an Equity actress out of Texas, and Will Little, who's a local Equity actor. Their energy and their professionalism, I learned so much. And Jim Weaver, who is a director that we brought in from Ohio, I think he's now in New York, again, just mirrored for me a lot of what KT was. Very nurturing, but very on it, and very, so how are you feeling about this character? That's good. Now let's go here.
Yeah, but what about this?
Exactly, which I appreciate that, because it lets you, it validates what you're feeling or doing or how you feel about a character, but then also giving you the direction that you may need.
Right.
So
it uses what you have, but it's not limited to that, and
exactly.
It's not critical of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As opposed to do this, because
this is how I see it.
So you do it, and I don't do well with directors that way.
Well, it sounds like what you said, which is you won't respond well to that, period. And anybody who really wants to, well, I wanted to say anybody who wants to get the best from you wouldn't do it to you, but I think anybody who wants to get the best from anybody wouldn't do it that way. So
right. And I've been fortunate. I mean, Nate Jacob, he's definitely been that way with me. The one role that he kind of wrote in for me with the Marvin Gaye show was the reporter who was helping to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was an original piece that he wrote. And so it's been going through a transition and growing as we were doing the show. And he wrote that part in. And when he told me about it, he said, you have artistic license with this. Go.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, oh, okay. So I made her kind of sassy, and you know, I was channeling Jack A. If you remember
I
her.
I do.
That was who I was channeling for that role. Yes.
That's great.
she was fun.
So now you are in All Shook Up at the Golden Apple.
Yes.
You want to just say a little bit about this?
I love the Golden Apple. I love Kyle. I love everyone over there. They're just such really good people. And it's unfortunate that I was cast in Little Abner a few years ago, but I got really sick. Really sick. And I had to, unfortunately, drop out of the show. Got better and then was cast in Jar of the Floor, but that's neither here nor there. And so I went to a luncheon.
Oh, God, I saw you in Jar of the Floor. Oh, you were wonderful. And I loved that play.
I wish they
would do more stuff.
Like, it was a good piece.
Oh, it was wonderful. And you were amazing.
Thank you.
You were amazing.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I love that piece, Joy of the Floor. That was my first show with Alice, which I'm so grateful for that, too, because she's a very good friend, and I learned so much from her. But I wasn't able to do Little Abner. And a few weeks ago, we did a luncheon, because I did a workshop out at Oasis Middle School, I did a social etiquette workshop with them, and it was in collaboration with Carol Kleinberg and the Banyan, of course, now Plato. And so in appreciation of that, they had a luncheon at the Golden Apple. While I was there, Kyle said, "Did you know we're doing All Shook Up? You should audition." And I said, "No, I shouldn't. I have the best person for you." And I gave her the name of someone else. And she said, "Great, I'll give her a call." Which I thought this would
be. That was it.
That
right?
was it. Kyle then sends me an email and says, "No, I really want you to come in." I went, okay. And I'm thinking to myself, she just needs a body. She's not fooling anyone. She just needs a body. And I went in, I guess it would have, what would have been callback. So they had technically already had auditions. And went in, and I pretty much said to her, "You don't want me. Seriously, you don't." And she said, "Shut up, get up on stage, do this piece." And I did. And she says, "Okay, you're cast."
Wow.
And I thought, you know what? It's the summer. Business is slow. It would be an interesting challenge. Why not?
Okay.
And my role is Lorraine. And for anyone who doesn't know All Shook Up, it's kind of like West Side Story, Grease, Elvis Presley songs, Romeo and Juliet.
Wow.
You know, put that all together. If they had a love child, it'd be All Shook Up. And Lorraine would basically be your Juliet, you know, with it's an interracial relationship. So Lorraine is a young African-American girl in a small town, and then her love interest, who is Dean, comes in, and of course they're not supposed to be together.
Right.
And
do you have to die?
No.
Oh, how
no,
nice.
No dying in this one.
Oh, good.
No dying. They actually have a happy ending.
Oh.
And it's a good show. There's some amazing talent. The voices, it's a good show. And I'm grateful for Kyle's patience. Really grateful.
The other question that I ask is, I have to amend it for you. Because I'm usually talking to people who have spent their entire life doing whatever it is that we're talking about, and you haven't. But in a shorter, much shorter period of time, you have done it as though it's your life. You know, I mean, it has filled up this section of your life. So is there anything that you would say about what that's like?
Well, I will say I get a little tired of hearing people say, "Well, it's never too late."
Oh.
Yeah, what the heck does that mean? If you're doing something that you enjoy, it shouldn't matter at what stage of your life you're doing it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Because I think if I had that mentality when the opportunity presented itself, I would have analyzed it more.
Yes.
Which I didn't. And I'm extremely grateful. It helped me, like I said, working with KT to find my voice, to find another aspect of myself that I wasn't privy to for such a long time. But then also it opened a lot of doors. I am so richly involved in such an amazing arts community. Some of my very dearest friends are artistic directors and actors and singers and producers, and I've gone on to do video and film production and television commercials and short films with Ringling. And I don't believe any of that would be possible if I had not just listened to that opportunity and said,
Okay,
as opposed to, "Well, I'm at this age," or, "This wasn't what I intended," or to do all of that would have, no, I wouldn't be where I am without having had that opportunity. So if nothing else, I won't say it as advice. It's just when there's something that moves your whole self, the foundation of your being, which is what acting does for me, if I could, I would do it all the time because it allows me to truly be, to truly be open. We live our lives sheltered. We're sheltering our feelings. We're also very cognizant of what other people think. And someone asked me not too long ago why I decided to act or or what I thought about acting. What was it for me? And I said, it's a gift. It is a gift to myself, and it's a gift to whomever I work with on that project, and it's a gift to whomever decides to partake of it, whether they're backstage or if they're sitting in the audience. It is a gift.
This is a great place to stop. Thank you very, very much, Jesse.
My pleasure.
It's wonderful.
Well, I didn't tell Jazzy that the theme of the Lynn Show was finding, being, recovering, demonstrating, experiencing who you really are, but there, in a nutshell, at the end of the interview, she essentially sums it up. Well, as she has discovered acting, she has discovered an activity in which she can be her whole self, not have to do, as she says, hide her emotions, worry about what somebody else says. No, she is Jazzy, 180% of her, with everything that she has out there on display. And that when you can do that, when you can be your whole self without holding back, without pretending, without worrying, that is the most freeing, most exciting possibility for a life. And it is why I do this show and why I say the things that I have said over and over and over again about being willing. And Jazzy is of another aspect that I talk about, and that is that, as she says, it's not too late to discover aspects of yourself which were hidden, for which you were in denial, which maybe poked their head up at some point and you said, oh, no, that's not me, or that doesn't work in my life, or that won't work with my family, or that's not what I'm supposed to be, or whatever. It's not too late to find some of those qualities without which your life is so much less. And when you listen to Jazzy and you hear the energy and the passion and the commitment and the delight and the joy that she gets from having discovered this part of herself, well, you know that it's worth doing. And as I have said, there can be prices to pay for that. There can be unpleasant consequences. And you want to be alert to the possibility of those consequences. And I will talk more about that in coming shows. But again, if you want to learn more about that, you can go up on the website, thelinshow.com, and you can click on the book, listen to the first chapter of it, ask me any questions that you want. But now I want to play two more songs from All Shook Up. In case you didn't get enough excitement from Jazzy's description, I'm sure that you will from these songs. So I'm going to play Heartbreak Hotel and It's Now or Never from All Shook Up.
Well, since my baby left me, I found a new place to dwell.
Down at the end of Lonely Street called Heartbreak Hotel.
I've been so lonely, baby. I've been so lonely. know what that means. It's now or never, my love won't fade.
When I first saw you, with your smile so tender, my heart was captured, my soul surrendered.
Your lips excite me.
Let your arms invade.
Now or never.
It's now or never. Oh, hold me tight. Kiss me, my darling. Be mine tonight. Tomorrow will be too late.
It's now.
Isn't that great? I'm sure you want to see this play. So, again, if you happen to be living in or around Sarasota, Florida, or you're coming to someplace in Florida for a vacation in the next few weeks, run down to the Golden Apple and see not only Jazzy, but this wonderful, wonderful cast, and hear this wonderful music and see this delightful play. So, as always, I have to thank the wonderful and delightful Josh Hackney, who makes all of the technical things that I do in my life possible. And again, if you need anyone to do anything with electronics, with recording, with computers, with PowerPoint, with any program, with iPhone, with you name it, Josh can either do it or figure out how to find out how to do it. And he can either come and do it for you, or he can walk you through it on the phone, which is what he does for me so often. And I like to say, you know, that's what I also do with my work, my private practice, all on the phone these days. So, if you want to get Josh or find out anything more about me and the work I do, it's thelinshow.com. And as always, I hope that you heard something that you could use in this show. Some information you didn't have, something that tickled you or entertained you or spiced your curiosity, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, next same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't. Singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. Going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So